Welcome to the Coin Podcast Network.
You want to be able to do it all.
It's a lot of great energy.
Upbeat and going forward and excited.
Fun and juice, man. And we're going to get down to business.
From our studios in the Coin Tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is coverage of the National Football League you won't find anywhere else. This is Out of the Tunnel with AJ and Marcus on the Coin Podcast Network.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Out of the Tunnel with your hosts, Marcus Greaves and AJ McCord. Another week in the NFL has wrapped up. You know what that means. We are back in action. AJ, what is up, girl? How are you feeling today?
I am good, my friend. I am ready. It feels like the Seahawks have a short week, and it feels like my week got shorter, too.
Yeah, definitely. I can only imagine. And you're going to be traveling up to Seattle, aren't you, for the game?
I will be, yeah. We'll be there for their rematch against the Cardinals, something that I know every single player on the Seahawks is looking forward to.
Right, and that's going to be an interesting game. But we'll dive into that later on in the show. But let's start with our top headlines, of course. First one will be Tua gets the best of Justin Herbert. That is an interesting one because the Dolphins have actually been kind of on fire. And while the Chargers seem like they are doing well, at times, I should say, in first halves and or second halves, they fell to the Dolphins 29-21. Tua outperformed Justin Herbert. AJ, I want to get your quick thoughts on that. You know, as someone who's followed Justin Herbert for quite some time now, both of us have actually, I mean, do you see Justin Herbert maybe taking another step in his game? Or is it kind of like this season, I should say, or do you think it's going to be something as, you know, the season's kind of washed right now. The Chargers are just down. They can't seem to get over that hump. Maybe it's time to start fresh, start over, and look forward to next season where they can rebuild in a way.
I mean, I think you just have to keep taking it week by week, right? I'm sure there's a handful of NFL teams who would love to just say, all right, well, this season's not going to work out.
Yeah.
But if you start breaking that down, then each player, each person, each position group has something to play for, whether that's a contract, whether that's family, whether that's personal pride, whether that's love of the game, whatever. So it's hard because the Chargers are 2-7. And so I haven't looked at the AFC West yet or in a minute, but I don't imagine that's going to be good enough
right
for a spot in the playoffs. So for Justin Herbert, I think, and Anthony Lynn to that extent too, I think it's a chance to say, I want to keep see you keep getting better each and every week. Yeah, 2-7, they're done. I forgot, the Chiefs, duh.
Right.
So I think, you know, for Anthony Lynn and the Chargers and Justin Herbert, it becomes about how do I get better each and every game. Justin Herbert is having a historic season, especially for a rookie, especially for a team who hasn't won pretty much at all since he started. I think he's had one win as a starter, maybe two. Obviously, they're going 2-7. So I think that I think it's a week-by-week thing. I think Tua was good, but I wouldn't say that I was, like, wildly impressed with Tua either.
Right.
He's definitely coming into his own, which is exciting to watch. Mm-hmm. And the Dolphins are 6-3, so that's much better than Herbert's stats. But, yeah, it's just brutal, man. And Justin Herbert's one of those guys that, you know, we've followed through his time at Oregon, really growing up even in Eugene. Like, everyone in Oregon was aware of who he was. And so it's hard to watch him come to the NFL and have the great success that he's had personally. And then his defense just lets him down week after week after week. So you can't throw the towel in because that's not how the NFL works. But I think for Justin Herbert, it has to become an internal goal. Your goal can't be obviously like, what can the team do this year? It becomes what can I do this year?
Exactly. And like we said, Tua got the best of Justin Herbert. Miami beat Los Angeles 29-21. Tua finished the game 15-25, 169 yards, 2 touchdowns. Justin Herbert finished the game 20 of 32, 187 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception. So both the Rooks are looking good. I'm excited to see what they're going to do in the future. But AJ, a play of the game or a play of the year, which was the craziest thing I've ever seen. Kyler Murray obviously found DeAndre Hopkins in that Bills versus Cardinals game-winning Hail Mary pass. Is there anything better than a Hail Mary at the end of the game? I mean, it seems like every single time we kind of understand. Like
a big man touchdown. That's kind of fun.
Big man touchdown. You'd love to see it. And you know what was the coolest part is if you get on social media, it was pretty funny to see all the, you know, there was like, I think the Bills defenders were wearing, what was it, Adidas gloves
and Nike.
And Nike gloves.
Under Armour,
I think. Yeah, Under Armour gloves. And then there was the Jordan gloves that DeAndre Hopkins was wearing. Jumpman. It was so cool to see. But that was a crazy game, AJ. And this is something that we're going to talk about later in the show, obviously. But with the Seahawks now taking on the Cardinals, I mean, the Cardinals look good, and they look really good, and they're the first team who beat the Seahawks and kind of put the film out there of how to beat these guys. They are going to be something special, but AJ, that last play, Hail Mary, I mean, was that the play of the year in your mind? It has to be up there.
Oh, had to be. Mm-hmm. I'm, like, racking my brain, but, like, really a more impressive catch. Like, I recognize it was a Hail Mary, so maybe you could argue, like, something like what OBJ did was just a little different, but I don't know. That was pretty wild to just throw it up there. And I just think Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins are having so much fun playing football right now. And it's so obvious that it's like, I mean, you can obviously hate them if you're a Seahawks fan or a fan of an opposing team, but it's really hard if you're just a football fan not to just love watching them play because they're having a freaking blast right now.
And seeing the confidence in those guys, I mean, I remember it was against the Seahawks when Kyler Murray was smiling when he saw DeAndre Hopkins was in single-man coverage on the outside. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that when you see, you know that they're having fun and you love to see it. And, AJ, to finish off our top headlines, the Steelers moved to 9-0. And I know the Steelers are good, but I think, at least in my opinion, they've kind of been a little under the radar. As in, like, they're not a team that everyone talks about all the time. Obviously, you throw the Seahawks in there, the Chiefs. You'll throw the Ravens in there. But a lot of these teams who are really, really good, right, they're the ones in the spotlight. Steelers are 9-0, and it seems like they don't really have a lot of the spotlight. Like I said, they moved to 9-0 after beating the Bengals. I mean, the whole – they might have the best front seven defensively in the entire football league. And I might have to die on that hill because I don't know if there's any team that's better than those guys defensively. I mean, you look back in the backfield as well, in the defensive backfield, excuse me, you see guys – like Steven Nelson, Fitzpatrick, those guys, they're just like, all of them are just freaks, and they're just physical, tough guys. That's what the Steelers are all about. You look at the receivers, big, tall, athletic receivers will make plays. Offensive line is great. Obviously, Big Ben, he's a tough guy to tackle and take down. And then James Conner, he's nothing super special, but he does just enough. And I think everyone fits their roles extremely well for the Steelers. And so, AJ, my question for you is, do you think the Steelers are a true Super Bowl contender?
Absolutely. I think the reason they're not part of the limelight is almost because it hasn't been that difficult for them to stay undefeated. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at their scores, and there's only a handful that have been single-possession games. Most of these, I mean, 38-7 over the Browns. You had 36-10 against the Bengals. The Titans game is exciting. The Ravens game was exciting. But, I mean, for the most part, they're just doing really well, and they're also other than the Ravens, I'm looking at their schedule, really other than the Ravens there aren't any other like national big storyline teams that they're playing, so they're just not taking up as much of that national spotlight because the Steelers are the team that people care about in that matchup. And like tonight they got, or this week they got the Jags, and then the Ravens again, which will be fun, but then they've got Washington. I mean, it's just so. But there's literally no debate that this team absolutely can be a Super Bowl team. I'm just super, super stoked for what will hopefully be an epic matchup between Mahomes and the Steelers.
Yeah, that'll be
fun.
Yeah, that would be super fun. And AJ, something that wasn't very fun, it hasn't been very fun lately, is watching the Seahawks play because they dropped another game to the Rams, 23-16. We're going to break that whole thing down, give you guys our keys to the game, and obviously close up the podcast with a positive story to leave you guys feeling good after this episode. But first, let's take a break.
Hey everybody, executive producer Ian Costello here, coming to you from the Work From Home Coin Podcast Studios. When we started our podcasts back in February of 2019, we had no idea that we would end up here. Now, a year and a half later, tens of thousands of you are listening to hundreds of our podcasts, and we need to make some changes to grow even further. That's why, starting this week, you can find all of the Coin Podcasts in one place. The brand new Coin Podcast Network. From Beaver Smack to Writer's Block. From your weather to our constant coverage of the coronavirus pandemic and the protests in Portland. It is all available in one place. So, to keep hearing the podcasts you already love and to discover more of our exclusive audio content, head to coin.com/podcasts or search Coin, that's K-O-I-N, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or Podbean. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Out of the Tunnel with AJ and Marcus on the Coin Podcast Network.
Normally you don't like quick games like this, but you know, it's good to get back on the field and kind of, you know, brush these losses off.
Welcome back to Out of the Tunnel with Marcus Greaves and myself, AJ McCord. So it has hit the part of the show where we are talking Seahawks. Obviously, you just heard Bobby Wagner, linebacker for Seattle, talk about how this short week is actually maybe a blessing for these guys. And Marcus, this is a Seahawks team who is not all that used to losing, period. Really not used to losing two games in a row. And it's absolutely foreign to think that they could be in the position to lose three games in a row. And so as someone who used to play, do you feel like that's the case, that as soon as you have a loss and two of them back to back, you want to get back on the field immediately to get a new memory in there?
Right. It's kind of like, I definitely think that that is a mentality that they need to have. I think everyone who played football or has been a part of a football team, it varies, right? Some guys, you know, if you have back-to-back losses, sometimes guys like to go back, watch a lot of film and be like, okay, so this is what we did wrong. And, you know, every team does that. But other guys, you know, like a Bobby Wagner, is like, hey, okay, well, we know what we did wrong. We already watched the film. Now let's get back out there. Now we're kind of fired up. And to me, I saw a little more something from the Seahawks and Bobby Wagner that I haven't seen for the beginning of the season, I should say, earlier in the season. And that was just the fact that they were talking a lot of smack. And that's what I like, because it shows that they're finally starting to get frustrated. You know, it seemed like if teams scored, they'd kind of, you know, throw up their arms back. Well, that, you know, that's not good, but we at least got an offense that can score. Now the Seahawks are – now it's starting to, you know, weigh on them. Now they're starting to lose games. So I think the quicker they can get out and get back on the field, the more that adrenaline, that anger, and all of that, just everything built up, is going to explode all over the field. And I'm excited to see what the Seahawks are going to do. Hopefully they can respond in the right way with the short week.
And I think it's important to remember, they didn't have Jamal Adams last time out that they played the Cardinals. And I asked Bobby about, you know, that the question that I asked him, and that was the answer that he gave me, was talking about, you know, last time you had one hurry on Kyler Murray. That was it. And it was a hurry. There was no tackle for loss. There was no sack. There was no pressure. And so how badly do you want another shot at him? Because right now the dude's got your number. And that was his answer. We want to get back out there. And so I think they didn't have Jamal Adams. They didn't have Carlos Dunlap. And after 2 weeks of losing, 1 week of Dunlap and Adams being out there together, also saw a little bit of snacks on Sunday, could see more of snacks on Thursday. I just think this defense is, like you said, they're frustrated, and Russell Wilson is human, it turns out. So that means this defense cannot count on him being a demigod and bailing them out on everything that they have needed him to bail them out on this season. So that brings me next to, of course, Mr. Russell Wilson. He's had a very uncharacteristic few weeks. He has had multiple interception games, which just doesn't happen. Last time out against the Cardinals, he had three interceptions to go with his three touchdowns. In the last few games, he's had two against the Rams, two against the Bills, and then those three against the Cardinals. So that's three multi-interception games. And obviously on Sunday, the play that sticks out to Seahawks fans is when he opted to try and throw it into the end zone instead of just running when he had so much green grass ahead of him. Pete Carroll said he and Russ talked about that play in particular, and here's how Russell says he's approaching his preparation this week to try and get back to that MVP caliber performance?
You know, we've got to make clear decisions. You know, I don't want to overcomplicate it. You know, I think that we've still been able to do some great things. But, you know, I think just staying focused on what the mission is right now. You know, I'm so focused on this week. You know, no matter how good it is or how tough it is, you know, you always got to be in the moment right now.
So, Marcus, it seems really simple. Make clear decisions. That's what Russ says he has to do. How simple is that, though?
I think, I mean, he obviously makes it sound really simple. It's not that simple, as everyone knows who's played, but – I think the thing with Russ is that he has a lot of confidence in himself, as he should, because he knows his ability and what he can do. But he knows the level he could play at, right? He was making, at the beginning of the season, he was making some of the best, you know, he was probably the best decision maker in all of football, without a doubt. You know, he was making the right reads, putting the ball exactly where it needed to be put if, you know, there was pressure or the defender was there or whatever it is. And like we saw last game, if there's a bunch of green grass, he would tuck and run. I think he's just putting a lot of pressure on himself because they're losing, right? And when you start losing, everyone starts, in a way, losing their mind. But Russ, like he said, he just has to get back to doing what he knows he can do. That's making the right decisions, making the right reads, whether that be watching more film, watching less film, and just going out there and reacting more, or whatever it is. The more that Russ can just be back to normal of how he's playing, the better the Seahawks team is going to be. Because AJ, you saw it. You know, there's plenty of times throughout the season where when Russ is playing comfortable, and you see him playing comfortable, I mean, it looks like same thing. He's out there just having a good time, having fun.
Mm-hmm.
But when they get down or the defense isn't holding up or maybe he's not producing on offense, that's when everyone starts to get desperate. You want to make those plays, and then you start to – your decision-making starts to blur a little bit, right? And it starts to get a little blurry compared to the clear cut, okay, I need to make this decision or not make this decision. So he just has to get back to playing calm, cool, and collective like we know he can, short memory, and then everything like that, and he will be back to normal playing like an MVP.
I think we can't underestimate either the running backs mm-hmm. and how the lack of them has impacted them, right? You played mm-hmm. running back, and so I'm sure it's not just about running the ball. It's not just about having confidence in short yardage situations, which obviously Pete Carroll is going to be questioned till the cows come home about why he did not go for it on 4th and inches and decided to trust a defense that has been atrocious,
mm-hmm.
as he should be. However, part of that is because Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde were not there. So you have DJ Dallas, who's a rookie, who you and I have seen miss a few blocking assignments that were critical. Yeah. And then you have Alex Collins, who joined the team a whopping 10 days before they played the Rams. And then you have Travis Homer, who has a hand issue, and so he's not fully healthy. So Russell Wilson is not only having to be a quarterback, but he's already at a disadvantage because he doesn't have that running back core that he can trust to either hand the ball off, dump the ball off, or block for him. So I think that is something, I mean, as a running back, I bet you can sort of attest to how critical of a role that is, that it's not just in the yards you can put up on the ground, it's in how well you can make your quarterback feel comfortable.
Right, and it's just your instincts and how you can read a defense as well. I mean, there's something to be said where, you know, say you're in, you know, you're in protection, max protection with the lineman, everything like that. You got to scan across the field, right? Most dangerous guy is my guy. But if you have, you know, a young guy out there or someone who doesn't know the system as well, who is not as comfortable as maybe a Chris Carson or a Carlos Hyde, then, okay, you're scanning across the field and maybe you're a little late. And when you're a little late to get over to block your guy, that guy is already in your quarterback's face. So then you're making things more stressful for Russ. Russ is then, he has to speed up his timing and everything. You know, he's going to be off of his groove, maybe throws a bad ball, gets picked off. There's little things like that that go a long way in plays, and that's why it's so important to have a running back who – I'm not saying – and this is what I'm saying is that these guys aren't terrible running backs. It's just that there's something to be said about experience, being in those situations.
And familiarity.
Yeah, absolutely. Just knowing what to do and when to do it. So, you know, these guys are going to have to watch a lot of film, and again – if they can't step up their game, then we're going to see a lot of the same from the offense because a lot goes into that running back. And you hear the commentators all the time on the broadcast saying, you know, who would have thought there was a game that Pete Carroll didn't run the ball this many times or Pete Carroll didn't establish the run this many times or whatever it is. It's just the fact of they don't have the horses in the stable at running back right now. So until they can get that, things are going to look a lot different on offense.
For sure. So we touched on a few things, but I want to hear – specifically your keys to the game for the Seahawks against the Rams, and then we'll move on to figuring out how on earth they can do better against the Cardinals in the last time out. So first and foremost, key number one for you against the Rams was pretty simple. It was just a bad day offensively.
Mm-hmm. It was. And guys just didn't look like they were that excited. The playmakers weren't really doing what they were doing. And it was just hard. Like we said, there's so many things that go into making an offense run smoothly and run like a well-oiled machine. But it didn't seem like everyone was on the same page. It seemed like the offensive line was on a different page than maybe Russ. And then Russ was on a different page than his receivers. And the running backs weren't on the same page with anybody. So it was just a big mess. And games like that happen. But, again, when you're a team like the Seahawks who have high expectations and you know, the number three or four offense in the entire league, I mean, those are games that you can't have, right? And we already know that. But it was just overall, AJ, just a really bad performance offensively. Honestly, in my mind, it might be their worst one of the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was really – it was one of their worst just because it was so self-inflicting, right? Like, right. It wasn't like the Rams came out and were absolutely stellar. Aaron Donald didn't have this massive day. But the Seahawks really just were unimpressive on both sides of the ball, including a Mr. Russell Wilson, who a few weeks ago, there were not enough seats on the Russell Wilson for MVP bandwagon.
Right.
Today, DK Metcalf might be the only one on that. So key number two, Russell Wilson is not playing like an MVP.
Right, and he's not – it's just because, like we said, so many things go into it, but a lot of pressure's on Russ. He can't rely on his defense, and you see that from him. And maybe he won't come out and say that, but you could definitely see that from him where, okay, I can't rely on my defense. We're getting desperate because we get down because the offense isn't on the same page. The defense can't stop anybody. I have to make something happen like he always does. But then you start getting into that, and we'll see it, right? Late over the middle against the Bills. Late over the middle against the Bills a couple weeks ago, where he just tosses a really bad ball, and Russell Wilson wouldn't do that any other time, but he was able to make a play. And just like when he had that pick in the end zone against the Rams, again, same thing. He had all that green grass to run, but he felt like he had a better shot of making that big play through the air, which ended up being an interception instead of running for a touchdown. So his decision making has been a little blurred, and that's kind of the tough thing to watch right now and in regards to his MVP, you know, type season. But I think in the long run, Russ will come back around. I just think right now they're in a rough spurt, and the teams that they're playing, it's not like they're bad teams. So it's going to be tough for them. And again, people are starting to figure out what the Seahawks are about.
And that's your third key, which is that they're figuring out how to beat them. And really the team that they're facing on Thursday night is the one that showed everyone else how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just, you got to – teams have been extremely aggressive on Russell Wilson in regards to they bring a lot of pressure on him. They're going to put their best corner on DK Metcalf. And then on top of that, anytime Tyler Lockett goes deep or will go anywhere, you'll see two people following him. So they know that the running back's not going to be a huge threat. They'll live and die by the tight end play. But on top of that, if Russell Wilson is constantly under pressure because the offensive line, the running backs can't get the blocking right, DK Metcalf, yeah, he'll get a catch every here and there, but I mean, the best defender against DK Metcalf, I mean, that's kind of a toss-up again every single time. DK Metcalf is going to get his and make some big plays, but I mean, that's taxing on the body, AJ, to go out every single play and have the best guy in your face, have no other job other than to stick with you and be right in your hip pocket. Then if you're Tyler Lockett, you're frustrated as well because every place you're running to, there's two people with you, two, three people. Mm-hmm. We saw it against the Rams where there's a couple times Rush tried to go deep, and by the time Tyler Lockett got to the ball, there was three people downfield waiting for him. So those are just – that's the key. That's what the Cardinals did the first time they beat the Seahawks. And I'm sure we're going to see a lot of the same when they face them again. But that's just how it goes. Teams are starting to figure out this is the key to beat them. And until they can get the blocking back right or the defense can stop somebody, I mean, we might see a lot of the same thing. And the Seahawks, their schedule is not super easy to finish out the season. So – with that being said, they're just going to have to find ways to adjust like every other team had to adjust to them.
That's the name of the game in the NFL. You don't win just because you're good. You win because you game plan well each week and play into your strengths while exploiting the other team's weaknesses. Absolutely. So it's why Bill Belichick is as good as he is.
Yep.
So let's talk about the Cardinals for a hot second. You touched on this a little bit, but I think it's really important to talk a little bit further about it because it has been, and it was, such a like razzle-dazzle moment for the first three or four games, five games. They went undefeated 5-0. So for the first five games, DK Metcalf looked like he was unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
And then against the Cardinals, two catches, 23 yards. Now, Tyler Lockett had 15 catches for 200 yards. Right. So there was something to make up for there. But how critical is it going to be for DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett, whoever, to have a moment, almost like a DeAndre Hopkins moment on Thursday, to say, this is my game, and I'm going to win? Because Metcalf was shut down by Jalen Ramsey. He did not have a good time the last time they played the Cardinals. He didn't do well against the Bills. So what's it going to take to get DK Metcalf involved?
I just think get him the ball early and often, you know. And there's a couple times where guys have said, the commentators have said, hey, DK Metcalf is a lot bigger and more athletic than anyone he's going to go against, regardless if they're a great defender or not. Sometimes you just have to throw a jump ball, throw a 50-50 ball, and your guy's going to come down with it. I mean, at the end of the day, if you can get DK Metcalf feeling good and feeling confident when he starts talking a little smack, get him the ball early and often, like I said, guys, that's kind of something that's going to be tough for anyone. And that's the thing is, guys don't want to hit DK Metcalf. You can see it time and time again. I've seen so many videos of it where safeties will come down if DK Metcalf comes across the field, and they kind of give him like a little leg tackle. They don't like lower their shoulder trying to hit him because they know it's going to hurt them worse.
And they bounce back.
Right.
Like they're the ones who end up on the ground.
Yeah. And that's even the last time they played the Cardinals, we saw that. And that's what I'm saying is that, listen, whether it be DK Metcalf getting involved earlier often or Tyler Lockett, hey, if you're Tyler Lockett, same thing. A lot of the screen passes that the Seahawks have ran, I mean, they work. They really do. It's just a fact of if you let DK Metcalf impact the game, whether they be through the air or blocking or whatever it is, make sure that he gets involved first, and it'll make everything that much easier for Tyler Lockett. Because if you're drawing two or three defenders, someone will eventually be open. And this is another thing where I truly think the key to this game is we're going to have to see a running back step up and play big. It does not matter if it's going to be DJ Dallas or anybody else. Listen, if you have to step up and block somebody, I'm sorry, man, but as a former running back, you already know what I'm about to say. It sucks blocking. I know for a fact it is terrible to step up in the hole and see a 300-pound guy running as fast as he can at you. But get in his way, cut him. It does not matter. Just make sure you give Russell Wilson that extra time to make that big play like he can. And so in regards to that, if the offense can get going because of the blocking that's going to stay well and stay secure, then that's where the offense is going to get rolling. They'll put up big points. And then it's going to be another shootout, AJ. I mean, let's be honest. The defense is not going to improve drastically over, you know, 4 days. So these guys are going to have to step up, and someone's going to have to make a big play, whether it be Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, whatever it is. And even if it's a different defensive back, someone has to step up and say, like you said, this is going to be my game where I'm going to stop the disrespect for our defense and make it known that, hey, we might have had some rough games earlier in the year, but right now is where we're going to put our foot down, and you're not going to beat us.
And I think going back to the running backs, this is something I feel like kind of personally invested because I covered Alex Collins when he was at Arkansas. And the dude, oh my gosh, you would not believe some of the runs and the blocks that I saw this dude pick up in college. And he was in the SEC. Like, this was not this is no softball. And so when he got re-signed to the Seahawks, I even watched, and so maybe I say that to say I may be watching his matchup a little bit more closely just because I did cover him in college. And so we go back a long way. Mm-hmm. And from week one to week two with the Seahawks, I think he got better in the blocking. And if he's the same Alex Collins that I covered when he was in Fayetteville, he loves blocking. He takes full joy in hitting somebody. And so that is going to be something that Russell Wilson, I think, hasn't trusted yet. But if that's still the Alex Collins that is playing for the Seahawks that was playing back in Fayetteville, then that's going to be a massive, massive addition to that Seahawks backfield while Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde are still out.
Right. It's going to be interesting to see how that is going to play out and how these guys are going to step up to the challenge and see if they respond well or not. But, AJ, before we close up the podcast, as always, we got to give our little positive story. AJ, what do you got for us? What do you got for us that is going to make us leave this episode feeling pretty darn good?
Okay, well, first, this is going to be a roller coaster, so I need y'all to stay with me because you might want to grab the tissues first. So I know, I'm really sorry. So last week, Josh Allen's grandmother passed away. And he talked about it in his press conference. And so the Buffalo Bills quarterback has spent some of his time away from the football field at, I believe I'm pronouncing this right, Oshai Children's Hospital. And so he's spent a lot of time at this hospital and developed a relationship with patients, staffers, administrators. So when he mentioned that his grandmother passed away, the hospital's president sort of came out and was like, we heard about his loss, you know, we're thinking about him, hoping the best. And then after that, fans started donating money to the hospital. It was $17 at a time for the most part, obviously for Josh Allen's number. And over the first like 24 or 48 hours, they were like really humbled. But then all of a sudden it went from like, oh, this is a really sweet gesture to, oh my gosh, so many people are doing this. In fact, as of a few days ago, more than $500,000 were donated to the hospital in the memory of Josh Allen's grandma. Allen himself donated $17,000. And so not only is that, so obviously a very low moment of his grandmother passing, but now once Josh Allen and his family sort of have some time to grieve, the hospital plans on meeting with them to figure out how best to use the money to recognize and remember his grandmother. And so they talked about like, it could be a site, it could be an area of the hospital, it could be a program, but it's going to be a way for the family to see her name and her legacy live on at this hospital that's come to mean so much of them. And it's pretty wild. So Bills Mafia is far and wide, right?
Right.
So there are fans from all 50 states who've donated, and at least 10 different countries had wow. people donate, including the Czech Republic. That one was the furthest one away. So I think that's just really sweet and a reminder, like $17 seems like such a small amount. And especially in this season of giving, as we all, it's been a really hard year, but Thanksgiving is right around the corner. And I just feel like for me, what's really been on my heart is thinking about like, it has been hard, this 2020 chaotic mess, but there are still things to be really, really grateful for. And there are still ways that whether it's through your time, your talent, your money, you can bless someone else in this season where as hard as you think you have it, there's someone else who has it worse. I can almost guarantee it. And so I just thought that was a really cool story of how just such a small thing, $17, when you combine it by hundreds of thousands of people, becomes a really, really big thing. So not to ever feel like what you can contribute is not enough, because whatever you have, it is enough, and it will make the difference to the person that you're giving to or the community.
Absolutely. You should have told me that so I can grab my tissue, AJ. My goodness.
I said grab your tissue. I warned you.
I was not prepared for that. Well, AJ, that was a great story. Like AJ said, just be sure, spread love, everybody. I mean, that's what AJ always preaches, and you know, I have to do the same. And with that being said, that's all we have for you guys on this episode of Out of the Tunnel. Of course, you can always find me and AJ on social media. You can find AJ at AJ_McCord, me at Marcus_Greaves. Stay safe, stay healthy, wear your mask, social distance. Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Out of the Tunnel. We will talk to y'all next week.
Woot woot, let's do it.
Thank you for listening to the Coin Podcast Network. You can listen to more great Coin podcasts on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Please listen, download, subscribe, and review.